Blog Talk Radio.
Wait for that intro music to key up this Hard to God show right here tonight. DJ. Yeah, forget the music, man. Let's go out.
Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up. All the way up. I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Hey, we all the way up, man. This is Hard to Guard Radio. Host Ricky Rivers. Got my man Ego working on the DJ skills on the background.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still
Got my man Jad Rudolph in the back ready to spit a ill freestyle Hot 16 on this one.
Hollywood.
Who's Hollywood?
You.
You Hollywood. You and your man over here, Mr. 30 Minutes. Y'all Hollywood.
Hey.
I'm just.
Hey man, I'm just talking. Let's just make it real hot. Let's keep it short and compact, and we stretch it. Unless the conversation is that great, we need to keep on talking. But. Hey, I'm all for it, man. We're talking basketball. Right? We could be on here for days.
Yeah, Rick is about to go world traveler.
So I'm the Hollywood one.
Good. Y'all know I just got a lot of things planned, Jared, so I needed a little bit of time to kind of get myself organized and put together to make it happen. But, hey, this is like we're coming up on the eve of the end of this 2015-2016 season, and the playoffs is just right around the corner, man. So we're going to get Spiro Dees from the L.A. Lakers, former announcer.
Spiro Dees.
I'm sorry. I'm glad you corrected me now than later. But, yeah, we get him on the line talking about favorite Kobe stuff. I mean, just talking about Kobe, have you seen all these salutes and different everything that's going on with Kobe, the commercials? Is it too much? Is it too little? I mean, what's your stance on the Jared?
I think he's earned every piece of it. And, you know, again, for me, anytime you're honored and acknowledged by your contemporaries and those who you work with in business on such a large scale, it just speaks to the level of work that you put in, the level of respect that they have for you. Not every player that retired will get this. Not every player that has retired has received it. Only the special ones. And I think that you look at guys like Garnett, you look at guys like Duncan, and if they choose to go out in a similar fashion as Kobe, then, you know, they deserve the same thing. But not everyone is afforded this type of treatment, but not everyone has earned it. So it's cool to watch. People are going to miss Kobe Bryant more than you know, because to me, he is the protector of the standard of what is great. Not alone, again, along with someone like a Tim Duncan and you know, Kevin Garnett. To me, they give the example of what it is to actually be great. You know, it's not just about athleticism and size. It's really about skills and an understanding of the game, which I think has been lost on this next generation. And that's very, very important to understand how to play the game. So when you look at someone like Kobe Bryant and just the standards that he sets and just the way he plays the game and how he's fundamentally sound and the athleticism has only added to that over the years, I think when you see guys like Kobe leave the game, you'll understand when you see the quality of the overall game take a drop how much you really needed someone like that in the league.
Hey, Ed, I would ask you, you've been around the NBA, working at the Garden for years, man, longer than some of these guys play. Have you seen a more special kind of send-off than what we're seeing for Kobe Bryant? When you talk back to Michael Jordan's Kareem, well, I'm not sure you remember Kareem, that may have been a little bit long, Ed. I want to pull your age out there for.
Well, the funny thing is, my first Knick game ever was Dr. J's last game at Madison Square Garden, and I remember they gave him a rocking chair and they gave him all these gifts and stuff like that. But you got to remember when Kobe sent off, he didn't announce that he was retiring yet. It's just people assumed that this was his last game at the Garden. As far as people leaving and retiring, no. I've never seen, like, you know, as much love as one player has gotten. Only person I've seen, and that was in another sport, and that was Derek Jeter. But, Kobe's one of the greatest, and besides, and, you know, also Jared mentioned Kevin Garnett, who I'm pretty much betting on will also retire at the end of the season, mainly because he's been hurt and he hasn't played, and there's no reason for him to play next year. I mean, he's done what he's done, but nobody's, like, giving this guy a proper send-off than what he deserves. He actually maybe – I would hope, like, tomorrow is their last game. He should actually suit up just so the fans in Minnesota should give him a rousing standing ovation.
I think it's someone like Garnett to kind of just go out quietly and not with the hoopla that Kobe has going out. And I'd ask Jared, I'd ask you, if you're sitting putting Kobe in the Hall of Fame for the Lakers, which number would you retire, 8 or 24?
Both of them.
What's your bet?
Both of them. You retire both. 8 and 24.
I said the same thing.
If you're a player, if you could draft to the Lakers, why would you want to wear number 8? Right? Number 8 was a bad boy, man. Number 8 was a bad boy, got you 3 rings. Right? 24 did his own thing. It's like you had 2 separate careers. But no, you retire both. I mean, both have an incredible significance, historically to that franchise and to the league. You retire both.
I would agree. I'd agree. Get it.
No, I was going to say, I totally agree. Totally. You got to retire both.
I think so. Hey, you know,
did we lose somebody?
Yeah, Rick.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, I said we seem to have privy to knowledge that's happening around the NBA. When I think about certain things that's happening around the league, the Knicks' interest in Black, your thoughts on that, Edgar, as a Knicks fan?
I'm disgusted.
I can clearly understand your frustrations with that. As a Knicks fan, seeing them going back and forth, tell us again.
I said, what's the first thing that Carmelo Anthony is going to do when he hears about David Black? He's going to call LeBron and find out. Obviously, if LeBron didn't respect him, and I was there when I clearly saw how LeBron disrespected this guy while the game was going on, and LeBron, they'll call timeout. And LeBron, I got the guy out of there. I mean, that's enough said. My thing is like, come on, man, we got to do better. I mean, you got Tom Thibodeau available. You have Mark Jackson available. You know, even Scott Brooks. I mean, there's coaches out there that are available, but we should talk to them. And even if let's just talk to them. All right, I get it if you don't give them the job, but come on, you got to talk to these guys. Tom Thibodeau's a winner. Mark Jackson's a winner. Scott Brooks is a winner. David Blatt has won, but he won because of LeBron. So, and I know why he would hire David Blatt. It's easy. He ran the Princeton offense, which is almost like the triangle. He's a friend of Steve Mills. Yeah, I just have a problem that they're not giving, they're not talking to anybody else. And as a Knicks fan, I'm just, disappointed.
What's your response?
That's what happens.
What's your response, Jared?
Call me someone that's not surprised that the Knicks would make a bad hire or a bad move. What can you do? They're going to run things the way they're going to run things. It's just like, look, man, you hear the stories and the way people, like you bring up a guy like Isaiah Thomas, right? And people are so hung up on Isaiah did this wrong, Isaiah did that wrong, you ruined the franchise, right? But how can you be so upset with someone like Isaiah when there hasn't been any better moves or any creative moves or any risky moves that have taken place, with the new regime? So, far be it from me to think that they would do something smart like hire, Mark Jackson, Tom Thibodeau, or get creative, right, and go out and maybe look at a guy like Sam Cassell or Luke Walton, anybody. Go to the college ranks, and see who's available. But they're the Knicks, as a New Yorker, as a basketball fan, you just have to admit that they just have really become a laughing stock. And now, look, I don't think any player on the team, Melo included, you know, should have a significant say on who the coach is because they have not won. But you don't hire David Blatt. You know, he's done a lot in the European game. You know, anybody with LeBron James can win a significant amount of games. I think that's been proven. He's just not a guy that I would hire. There's too many others that are better fits. I would not look at him at all.
I agree with you, Jared. Hey, you know, the next thing, Jared, I saw with you is I was reading an article about the NBA starting to put sponsorship patches on the uniforms, kind of like what they do overseas. So this is something new. I don't think the NBA has been in that position before. What's your thoughts about NBA and this whole adding sponsorship thing to the to NBA apparel?
I absolutely hate it. And I think that there's enough money going around, and there are more creative and more productive ways to get money. You know, you can, you know, put an ad on the court. You know, name rights, whatever the case may be. I just think that NBA uniform, that jersey, that's something very sacred, right? Because not everyone can have that. These guys, they get to the league, they earn that jersey. So whether it says New York or Celtics or Wolves or whoever, to me, that's something that's very, very sacred. And I think that the brand itself sells. And I just think that there's certain things in the game that should be untouchable in the uniform. Is something that I've always felt should be untouchable. And I'm not a fan of it. I think that it cheapens the brand. I mean, imagine, you know, LeBron James coming down the court with, like, Beck's Bear on his chest or something like that.
Yeah.
It cheapens the brand. It's so unnecessary. It's not very, you know, appealing, you know, cosmetically. I'm just not a fan of it. It's like, how much money are you getting from this, and is it really worth it to deface these uniforms that they mean some? Every uniform has a significance. It means something, and it's so damn hard to get. Why would you want to now, you know, cheapen them by putting ads on them? You got these guys running around like billboards. This is not soccer. We're not overseas. It's not necessary. I think it's overkill. And I hope between now and the time of thinking about doing it that something changes.
I agree. Hey, Jared, thanks for that. We have joining us to the line right now is Spiro Didis. Did I get your name correct, Spiro?
Yeah, I mean, we've only known each other for 20 years. I hope you get it right.
No, that would be Edgar. This is Ricky Rivers. I'm sure this is our first time, but
oh,
I feel like I've known you for 20 years. I feel, but validate that for me. I'm validating now. It's too late.
I take that back. I apologize.
Spiro,
that was actually very good. It's been butchered about a million different ways, but that was pretty good.
Hey, you know I'm a professional. What's your name, man? We had some great times together. So, hey.
Hey, Spiro,
Edgar's
talking about a lot of great things about you. You've been with both the Knicks and the Lakers, a lot of years with the Lakers, especially during the winning times, and I'm sure you've had a lot of great moments with Kobe Bryant.
Yeah, you know, it was six of the best years I've had in this business for sure. You know, I was lucky enough to get the Lakers radio job, when I was 26 in 2005, and you know, as fate would have it, that was the same year that Phil Jackson returned to L.A. for his second go-around with the franchise. And it was just as the team was kind of finding its way again after a couple of lean years. And I was really lucky. You know, it started out with a couple of first-round exits against Phoenix in the playoffs. You know, when Kobe was just going out of his mind, you know, the 81-point game and that four straight game stretch where he had 50-plus points, you know, incredible individual stuff. And then Pau Gasol arrives in February of 08, and everything changed. And to be, you know, a kind of a traveling member of that team and to see firsthand what it was like in this city when the Lakers are going good and Kobe was at the peak of his powers, it was something I'll never forget. It was just an incredible run.
How did you see Kobe grow from when you first got there to the championship years?
You know, guys, he really changed. When I first got here, it was kind of the tail end of a couple of really frustrating years for him. And it was interesting to travel with them I can remember, I think my very first trip, we were just starting out an East Coast swing, and D.C. was our first city. So, you know, typically, Edgar, you know, I've been traveling with the team for a long time. You basically pull up in a couple of big buses to a hotel. You know, the suitcases are all organized. Everyone kind of gets their room keys and goes on their way. But it was interesting. We got in the lobby, and Kobe would travel with two or three security people who were just basically assigned to him. And I'll never forget, we get into the lobby of the hotel in D.C., and his two security people hold up the entire team for Kobe to get off. Kobe would sit in the back of the bus. He was the last guy off the bus. So basically, his two people are holding up Kobe's teammates. Even Phil Jackson is sitting there waiting, like, whoa, what's going on? Like, what? Why are these two security people holding up the hotel? And it was basically so Kobe can cut everyone in line, get on the hotel by himself, and go up to his room. And I was like, wow, is this how it is in the NBA? But, you know, fast forward a couple of, you know, later in the year and a couple of years later, he was so different. And I think that the biggest reason was that frustration of losing and maybe not necessarily having respect for some of the guys he was playing with when I first got here. You know, you think back to like Smush Parker, and, you know, some of the other no-name guys that were really kind of part of the problem, I think, in Kobe's eyes. And when he's losing, you know, he's not a very fun guy to be around. And as the team started to build with really championship caliber players, you know, when Powell got here, and obviously Lamar and some of the other guys up and down the list, he really started to embrace being a good teammate and you know, just being nice, just being the guy that you wanted to be around. And that's not a good thing about him. I think he learned a lot about being a good teammate, but it was just interesting to see how he evolved of just being a teammate, being a guy that you wanted to be around, and then certainly a guy that you can win with.
Hey, Spiro, you did mention something that a while ago, there was a time when the rumor had surfaced about Smush Parker and Kobe Bryant. We had Smush Parker on the show here. He was very vocal about some of his feelings and opinions about Kobe Bryant. Just last week, we had Mike James on the line, and he had some talk about Kobe Bryant. And some things that I heard them say and I heard you say is that Kobe just wasn't always a great teammate. He just always seemed to be a difficult guy to adjust to and to get along with. He alienated some of his teammates. In your time of being there, did you see signs of that as well?
Yeah, I don't think Kobe was a good teammate when I first got here, when I observed how he was. But I think it came down to a very simple thing for him. If he felt like you were a guy he could win with, and a guy that he can go to war with, he respected you and he treated you well. And that doesn't necessarily make it right, you know, to be a bad guy or be a bad teammate. You know, I think Smush Parker, if you get him alone, probably has some pretty strong opinions about Kobe, because, you know, here was Smush Parker, obviously not the most talented guy in the league, but he was working hard. He was trying his best. And Kobe just was not as forgiving and nice, I think, a teammate, welcoming a teammate as he should have been. And that's an indictment on Kobe. I think if you ask Kobe that, he'd admit that, you know, he was not the best of teammates. But as soon as things started to change, and for me, that line was Pau Gasol. Again, that trade that brought him here changed everything. And I think overnight he realized that the group that he had around him suddenly was good enough to get him back to the mountaintop of the NBA. And with him, it's all about winning. That's all he cares about. You know, there's other guys in the league now that I think place a high importance on winning. But for Kobe, it's 1, 2, and 3 on his list. You know, being a popular guy, being a guy that people want to hang with socially when the game is over, that was never something that was important for him. You know, Derek Fisher revealed something in a story a couple of years ago that really stunned a lot of people. And that was that he had never been to Kobe's house ever. You know, and these are two guys that won 5 championships together and played with each other for over a decade. And when people heard that, they were like, I think it really illustrates just how kind of private he was away from the floor. For him, it was a business. It was winning championships, and everything else just kind of fell by the wayside. It didn't really matter.
As someone that was close to the team, take us through what it was like on those nights when Kobe just would go out of his mind and that we hadn't quite seen before, whether it was scoring 81 or 62 in 3 quarters. Just take us through the atmosphere and, you know, just how the arena would be when Kobe really got it going.
Well, for me, the one thing, guys, that I'll never forget, and the one thing that I always liked when we would travel to these different arenas was scanning around the arena when Kobe would first come out for warm-ups, you know, and when you'd kind of look out into the crowd and you knew there were people that were seeing him in person for the first time, you know, after seeing this megastar play on TV and win championships on TV for so many years. And, you know, seeing the look of excitement and just kind of raw emotion, you know, whether it was a little kid who was 6 or 7 years old or, you know, a fully grown adult who would just kind of lose their mind, you know, catching a glimpse of this guy for the first time, that's something that I'll never forget. That was always really cool, traveling to all these different arenas around the country. From a broadcaster's perspective, covering him for 6 years, I've never been challenged like that in anything that I've done, whether it's the NFL, whether it's the NBA, whether it's college basketball and March Madness. Every time you broadcast a game when Kobe was at the height of his career, you had to be on your toes because anything was possible. And it didn't take long for me to figure that out. You know, the 81-point game was I think 3 months into my first year with the team, and it was crazy. I mean, I could remember, you know, thinking about going out and buying like one of those little pocket thesauruses that you get, because I literally would run out of adjectives or superlatives to use to describe what we were seeing. It was so incredible. So that's one thing that I'll take away. It's just how he would challenge you as an announcer, as a play-by-play guy who's covering his games on a night-in, night-out basis. You know, he really challenged you to be at your best, and that's something I'll appreciate for as long as I do this.
Hey, Spiro, if you had to relive that game where he scored 81 points, is there a spot during that game that you could take us back to where we couldn't see as a viewer that you would say, hey, if you were there, you had to witness this, and this was a turning point in that game, and that Kobe may have said something, did something that we couldn't see on TV?
Boy, you know, he started so quickly in that game. You know, there were nights where he had that look where he was not looking to pass. You know, he had that kind of grimace that he developed over the last couple of years of his career. And the one thing people forget about that game is that they were down 18 points in the second half. You know, it was not one of these kind of runaway games where they were up 20 and Kobe was just kind of doing his thing. I mean, he basically had to score all 81 of those points for them to win that game. That's as incredible as that seems now. The one thing I'll never forget about that night, guys, is just saying some of the things we were saying. I mean, 70 points for Kobe. It's just like, it's one of those things you never expect to say, you know, for an individual player during the course of a game. And the other thing was, from where we broadcast Staples, we're basically center court about 15 rows up, you know, amongst the fans. There was like one long table where all the announcers would be. And I'll never forget seeing this one guy who was probably in his mid-30s running up and down the aisle, like high-fiving complete strangers after every time Kobe would score. I mean, the look of shock on people's faces. People had their cell phones out taking pictures. We saw complete strangers hugging each other, high-fiving each other. Mm. It was like one of those just surreal moments that it doesn't leave you for however long you're a fan or a broadcaster covering this game.
You know, you've been with the Lakers for 6 years, so I will want, what is your best, your own personal great memory just between you and Kobe, your interaction with him, not during the game, but maybe outside of the game, on the plane, on the bus, where you could like, wow, this is pretty amazing.
Boy, you know, there were a couple of things. The one thing I tried to do, I tried to be the guy who was not like in his face, and I think as the years went by, I think that was something that you appreciated because everyone wanted a piece of him. You know, I mean, all the great ones that you're around, you know, they're constantly being pulled and you know, approached by people. We're around them on the plane, and it's really like kind of an intimate thing. So I never wanted to be someone who was in his face, and I think as the years went on, I think you appreciated that. We kind of had a couple of cool moments, whether it was a little quick conversation on the back of the plane or in a hotel lobby or wherever we were. But I'll never forget my very first Laker game in November of 2005. We're in Denver. And, of course, Kobe hits like a 22-foot shot at the buzzer to win it. And, you know, it was the most nervous I've ever been. You know, it's my very first Lakers game that I'm doing. I'm 26 years old. And, you know, sweating through my suit, you know, worrying if I'm doing a good job and, you know, what everyone's going to think back home. But I'll never forget, on the plane, we get back on the plane to get back to L.A., and, you know, the adrenaline just starts to wear off. You know, it's kind of dim on the plane. Everyone's kind of falling asleep. And just as I close my eyes, I'm sitting on the back on the aisle, and I feel someone tap me on the shoulder, and I look up, it's Kobe. And he looks down, he kind of winks at me. He's like, how was your first game? And before I could even stammer anything out, he just kind of starts, you know, hooting and hollering and laughing. And he just kind of walks up and leaves. And I just saw, I'm just sitting there like, you know, where am I? You know, what's going on? I mean, I just witnessed this game winner in my very first game, and Kobe Bryant, you know, a guy I've been watching on TV for so many years growing up in New York, you know, is acknowledging me, and kind of, we had that really cool exchange. And, you know, it was just kind of one little moment that was pretty surreal.
Yeah, that's I was gonna say, I know you're going. You know, first of all, I know you're going. You told me last week.
You're
actually going to his last game.
Yeah, I will be there tomorrow. You know, I called my old boss and I said, look, I don't want to bug you. I know people are, you know, banging your door down for tickets, but if you have any left for me, let me know. So I'm gonna go, and I, you know, I just want to be in the building, you know, for his last game, and to be there and to soak it up. It's going to be emotional, I'm sure, for a lot of people. It'll be cool, you know, see some old friends, and then to be there to witness the last time he walks off that floor as a Laker. It'll be pretty spectacular.
And where do you see the Laker franchise going after this?
Boy, you know, that's a $1 million question out here, guys. You know, it's this is it. I mean, this we always said the summer that he leaves is really the summer that they really have to start making some wise decisions. Because for me, you know, as great as Kobe was, because of how things have ended the last couple of years with the injuries, it was going to be really hard for them to bring a couple of free agents here, you know, in the latter stages of his career. So we all knew that it was going to have to be the summer that Kobe left, you know, that when his contract comes off the books and they have that financial flexibility. What
is Spiro there? Hey, guys.
Did we lose him?
It's something seemed to have happened. I don't know if we lost him, Edgar, but we seem to go through some technical difficulties there. Edgar, are you with us? Well, this is Hard to Guard Radio, and each week we're going to give you one of these in terms of signal and cell strength. That was Spiro Dedis giving us some good recollection of Kobe moments and his time of being there. We hope we can get him to complete that thought that he had, but that was good stuff, man. I mean, I like to hear that stuff with that guys could kind of like be right inside the game and give you that exclusive view that you really, that the fans really don't get to appreciate from watching on screen.
Yeah, that was definitely good stuff. I'm gonna go give him a call back, but I know we've been on the phone with him for the last like 15 minutes, so I'm gonna just text him.
Yeah, tell him we appreciate him having on there and kind of like recollecting with that. That's good stuff, man. Kind of hinting to what Smush Parker kind of alluded to the time that he was on here about the difficulties players had with Kobe. But all overall, talent on the floor, you got to appreciate his passion and his drive to be great, and that he was.
My thing is, where would you rank Kobe as an all-time Laker?
Wow, good question. I would say to me, the only folks I could put ahead of him, and I would, is Kareem and Magic. I'm still putting Kareem and Magic ahead. I would say that Kobe's the third best in that category. I don't know what you guys feel, but I put Kobe as number three.
Yeah, I got Magic one. Yeah, I got Magic 1, Kareem 2, and Kobe 3rd.
I'm going Kareem, Magic, Kobe. What about yourself, Jared? How you feel about it?
It's tough because, you know, with Kareem, I go Magic, Kobe, Kareem, only because there were some lean years there, and then, of course, you know, Kareem's first 5-6 years in the league, he was with Milwaukee, so you know, you talk about the legend of Kareem, you're including Milwaukee in that. He won a title in Milwaukee. And I think that a lot of the championship teams, you know, while he was the captain, you know, his role changed, and he wasn't the dominant Kareem that everyone was accustomed to. And then, you know, when he first got there, there was some lean years. You know, they didn't get off to winning. They weren't, you know, as successful, no fault of his own, but at the same time, he wasn't able to carry the team. So I would put Kobe, two, in front of Kareem, and, you know, then you have Wilt, and then you have Shaq. I think that the advantage Kobe has is that, you know, you have an entire career with the Lakers. So that's why he would get the nod over Kareem, at least to me.
You know what's crazy about the Lakers, though, quickly? The Lakers are probably the only team that will have four statues outside their arena after Kobe is built.
They could have a starting five in front of the arena.
Which is crazy.
They could put a starting five. They got Kareem, Magic. You could put Big Game.
They
Kane,
have Shaq. They have Shaq.
Shaq, Kobe.
I think the Celtics.
Do they have Jerry West statue out there?
Not yet, no.
No, that would be number five.
There are several statues out there.
Celtics could do. The Celtics could go that route if they chose to, couldn't they?
Celtics, yes. But outside in front of L.A., you got statues. You have Gretzky out there. You have more than just basketball out there. So they have several statues. It's almost like a museum and at the Staples Center.
The Garden could never have that. There's no room.
You make room, man. Of course you got it. You
nah,
there's
not. I mean, honestly, let's think about the only Knicks that deserve statues. Willis Reed, maybe Walt Frazier, Patrick Ewing. That's it.
It's three people.
Yeah, but they're not going to do it. So,
yeah, but
you know,
everybody's not. If you start giving like the Dominique Wilkins statue, look, no disrespect, but, I mean, Dominique Wilkins has a statue. It's like Yao Ming getting the Hall of Fame. I mean, if Dominique has a statue, then you give everybody one. Everybody shouldn't have a statue. So, you know, the Lakers are doing the right thing by honoring their all-time greats, and you can't knock them for it. It's just not something. It is an honor that has to be reserved for the best of the best, and I just don't think everyone should get a statue. If you haven't won a championship, you know, for your franchise, then no, you don't deserve a statue. It's not even anything that needs to be discussed.
Hey, tomorrow night, Golden State meets Memphis again at home to break the record to get 73 wins. Do they get it? Do they not?
Oh, they definitely get it. They're gonna blow these guys away. They're definitely gonna blow these. The game's not even gonna be close. That's my prediction.
Yeah, and Memphis is a depleted squad. I mean, injuries are, you know, their worst enemy right now. You know, it's not about Golden State. So, you know, hopefully for the Warriors, build up a lead quick enough where you can sit those guys down and let them coast, because the last thing you need is, you know, in a record-breaking game, someone to twist an ankle, pull a hamstring or something going into the playoffs. So, you know, get it done early, but it shouldn't be too hard. You know, Memphis is very good.
I would
right
say,
now.
My thing is, which game are you watching tomorrow? Golden State 73 or Kobe's last game?
Kobe's last game.
Kobe's last game, I think I have. But I'm hoping that they play Kobe every minute. Like, don't sub Kobe out. Like, don't sub Kobe out.
He's definitely playing 40 minutes tomorrow.
I don't want to see anyone. I want to see Kobe, and I hope that the other team doesn't play great defense on. Let Kobe get 82.
Yeah.
Well, no, they're not going to let him get. I mean, Utah has to win. If Utah wins, they have a shot at the playoffs. So, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. I mean, the Lakers suck, but you know, I just hope that Kobe's last game is better than Mike's last game. You know, Mike's last game with Washington when they played the Sixers, it wasn't good at all. I mean, nothing about the game was good. And, you know, he went in the end for a short period of time. You know, of course, he started the game, but he goes in. But it's just like he was ready to get it over with. And, you know, it was in Philadelphia. It wasn't on the road. And it wasn't cool. And, you know, I just want Kobe's game to be cool. Have them, you know, go out of their way to show this guy how much they appreciate him. And maybe he goes out there. You know, he had a good game against the Rockets the other day. Maybe he goes out there and, you know, and lets off a full clip in his last time on the NBA floor. But I just hope that it's a nice game, good production. Everything about it is you know, top shelf. Jordan's last game, it was hard to watch. And it's not because of the way he was playing. It just seemed like the game just was really, really drab, and it just wasn't a cool experience. It was almost like, let's just get it over with, and I don't want that with Kobe.
Hey, does Houston own the tiebreaker with Utah?
Yes, they do.
They do. Okay, so all Houston has to do is win. They have Sacramento on the grill tomorrow, and who knows how Sacramento performs. But, yeah, it will be interesting watching Kobe play in that game because, yes, Utah is trying to fight for their playoff life and try to get a win on the board to stay in contention.
Yeah, I think Houston win. I think Houston is going to definitely make the playoffs.
Right, but at what expense to get Golden State?
You know, play Golden State. I think they don't. Let's not be surprised. That series could go six easy.
Oh man, that series not going no damn six games. Give me a break. Look, man. Golden State's going to chop them boys up. They're going to run through them like a hot knife through butter, and that's not a series at all. So what do you win if you know you win tomorrow? You win the opportunity to go get your ass kicked by Golden State. They're not going to let anybody else get in the way of what they're trying to do, especially not these Rockets. Not these Rockets. Last year's Rockets, maybe even the year before that, those Rockets, maybe you give them a fight. These Rockets, nah. Not these Rockets. And it's a shame because with James and Dwight, it should be, like, this should be a team where you, like, we don't want to see these guys because at any given time, these two guys figure it out. It could be a problem. Nah, not these Rockets.
So let's, Jared, let's spend some time because I know Jared wanted the game to go to overtime. He hit the Buffalo Wild Wings button. So we're in overtime, Ed. So let's go overtime here on the show on Hard to Guard Radio. Let's talk about playoff, NBA playoff matchups. NBA playoffs are starting. Let's start out in the East right now. Cavaliers will hold the number one seed. They could possibly face either Detroit or the Pacers. But let's assume that they face Detroit. Who do you like in that series, you guys? Who do you like in that series? Cavs, Detroit.
Detroit.
You said Detroit.
I think the Drummond factor is pretty big with Cleveland. But I think the way LeBron has been playing lately, he's been definitely playing like he is the best player in the league, but obviously he's not. But I think Cleveland wins in five.
Yeah. What do you say, Jared?
Cleveland wins in four. I mean, look, you got, you know, a great young big man, a great coach in Stan Van Gundy, and I'm really happy for Stan and getting Detroit back to the playoffs so quickly. Cleveland wins. You know, healthy Kevin Love, Kyrie healthy. Cleveland wins. Them boys on the mission, and Detroit's not going to get in the way of them doing what they need to do.
Hey, I beg to differ, you guys, on such an easy series. I mean, Detroit has beaten them two out of one this year, and I have the feeling that Reggie Jackson and those guys in Drummond will challenge Cleveland in a bit, making that series go to six. Ultimately, I believe Cleveland wins the series, but I think it's going to be some close games, and LeBron is going to have to relive one of his Detroit Pistons series moments. They're going to be playing that footage to echo one of those games that he's going to need to play. So, let's go to another series. You got the Raptors, maybe the Pacers. Raptors and Pacers. Your thoughts on that series?
I think the Pacers can win it.
You think the Pacers can get them, Jared?
Yeah, you know, the 55 games, you know, good season for the Raptors, but, you know, there's always that team that their seeding and their record, you know, is a bit of an oversell. And I just think Toronto, as good as they've been, you know, if I'm a lower seed team, that's the team I want to see. I want to see Toronto because I think we have a shot. You know, just think they can beat them. So I like the Pacers. I like what Paul George has done. I think they can go in there and they can upset. That they can definitely stretch that thing to 6 or 7. But I like the Pacers. You know, if I had to pick an upset in the first round, that would be the one I would look to. I would look to the Pacers possibly upsetting. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat the Raptors. That's the one that sticks out.
That one sticks out for you. How about you, Ed? What's your thoughts?
I got the Raptors. I think definitely it'll be a battle. I can see a 6-7 game series, but I think what's happened to the Raptors the last 2 years in the playoffs?
You know, and if we move, I actually like the Raptors in the series. I think they've dominated so far. I think although I could agree with you, Jad, that it's a potential for an upset. I think Paul George had some breakout moments with Monte Ellis, but I think that Monte too streaky. I feel the Raptors are a little more consistent and have that chemistry built for this playoff run. I'll go with the Raptors in five in this one. Let's go.
Did we lose Edgar?
No, I got the Raptors. I told you.
The next series we're talking about, Atlanta, Charlotte. Charlotte's coming out of the basement now. What's your thoughts, Jarrett?
Atlanta wouldn't play Charlotte, would they?
It's possible right now. If you look at the playoff matchups right now, Atlanta's a 3 seed. Charlotte is at a 6 seed. I mean, things could change going into tomorrow. But right now, Charlotte.
But they had Miami in the round. And, you know, without Chris Bosh, anything is possible running into Charlotte. I thought Atlanta and Boston were going to play in the first round in that 4-5, which is an interesting series.
Well, that can change. I think there's a very tight race between 3 and 6 right now. So you got most of those teams with identical records. But if you look at just tonight, I mean, tomorrow we could be talking about a different picture because of that tight race right there. They're all within a half a game of each other or a tie. But if you look at it, it's potentially Atlanta of the seeds that we've shared. You're looking at Atlanta, Charlotte right now.
Who's the 3 seed right now?
Atlanta.
Yeah. Atlanta's the 3 seed right now, and Charlotte it would be the 6 as of today. But tomorrow morning, we could wake up to a different matchup.
So if it's Atlanta, I'll take Atlanta over Charlotte. If it's Miami, I will take Charlotte over Miami because Miami will be without Chris Bosh, and that changes everything.
Well, right. I'm going different. If it's Atlanta and Charlotte, I want Charlotte to win just because – I think Charlotte's actually my second favorite team in the league right now, just because of Kemba and what Kemba's doing, and Patrick Ewing's over there, and Steve Clifford is a friend, and he's a great coach, and I would love to see them get into the second round.
I would love that as well. Honestly, I would love to see Kemba have one of those UConn moments and lift his team to the second round and position himself. I'm not sure. If with Atlanta, I'm not sure if they match up with Atlanta. I think that could be a bit of a challenge for them. But that's one of those series I think you could see go 7 games. One of those you could see go 7 games, and I feel like the home court advantage would prove to be the difference in that series if Atlanta was to have the home court advantage. And because Charlotte, I believe, will win on their home court and will have difficulty stealing one on Atlanta's home court. If you look at the series, Atlanta's dominated them this year 3-1. So I'll give the edge to Atlanta to continue that in the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely.
Last, if we have the matchups in the East, you got Miami, Boston. Boston is a very hot team, very well coached. Miami, a lot of experience. You said no Chris Bosh, which is key, but Whiteside. This is his first playoff run, right?
He's playing great. Me personally, I would love to see Miami beat Boston because I would love to see Wade against LeBron in the second round because for some reason, you know, Cleveland's not going to sweep them. And Wade, you know, when Wade faces Cleveland and faces LeBron, he's a different type of player.
Different. I would love to see that series. That was a game that I wouldn't miss. I would love to see Miami versus Cleveland and a playoff matchup to kind of go to the conference finals. I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, I like Boston. I like Boston in the first round, regardless of who they see.
Yep. I'm with you on that one, Jared. We don't agree all the time. I'm with you on that. I like Boston. I like Boston in this one. I think I like the coach. I think they very well coach, good discipline. They play together, and Isaiah Thomas – it's just kind of like he's getting it done. And I feel like he takes that up a level in the playoffs. Very confident right now. Y'all ready to take a plane out west?
Yes.
Golden State, and I don't care who you face. Houston, Utah, they're on the grill.
Nothing to talk about. I said Houston could give them some problems, but obviously Jared differs. But Golden State wins.
Sweet. I think it's a sweep. I think it's a sweep in the first round, right? If they get Utah or if they get Houston.
Yeah, and it's nasty. It's ugly. Like, you know, people losing their jobs. that type, you know, losing by 25, 30. Like, no, seriously, listen, this is a buzzsaw, and, you know, they got everything going for them. You know, chemistry's right. Everyone understands their role. Everyone has accepted their role. They're on the mission. They came into the season with a chip on their shoulder and at the very least tied the record for the best single season, you know, in history. So all they need to do now is do their jobs, right? But if they're going to lose, it's not going to be to Utah or Houston. It's just not. Everything that they have going for them, the other teams have working against them. And they will exploit it. And then from 1-5, most teams they're going to see, they can win the matchup. Not necessarily have the best players, but they can win the matchup because of the style of ball that they play. And not everyone can say that. Not everyone can say, look, you know, our five-man can win the matchup with your five-man, even if your five-man is because we're going to position our five-man better than you position your five-man. It's just – Houston, Utah, they have nothing for Golden State at all. Nothing.
Yeah. Now, the next series you got, and I agree, the next series you got San Antonio right now facing Dallas. But in my opinion, I feel as if Memphis plays the Clippers tonight, they'll lose that game, in my opinion. Is that in L.A.? Tomorrow, Memphis is getting the Golden State, who's going to be in a high street on a back-to-back, which I feel they definitely get tarnished in that game. So I feel like Memphis will drop to a seven seed. Dallas has San Antonio tomorrow night coming up for back-to-back, which I believe Popovich rests all his star players in the last game of the season, and they play the back. Kyle Anderson sees a lot of minutes. And Dallas takes that game and goes up and bumps themselves up. That's just my play. So I would like to say San Antonio versus Memphis. Who do you got?
San Antonio 5.
Jad. I'm sorry to cut you off. I was going to respond, Edgar.
I said San Antonio 4.
Yeah, I say San Antonio in a sweep, too. I don't think Memphis gets a game in this thing. I think they end the season in the losing streak, and they never get it corrected in the playoffs. They finish. They go on a straight losing streak. They don't bounce back from the Golden State loss.
Agreed.
The next series, you're talking about OKC versus Dallas. Very little more appealing to me. OKC versus Dallas. Who you got? OKC at home.
I think OKC sweeps them.
Sweep?
Okay.
I say sweep.
Nah, 5 or 6.
Nah, you think Dallas is going to win 2 games? They're going to beat them for 2 games?
Did you think Dallas was going to be as good as they were this year?
No, but I think I have a belief that Oklahoma City is playing. They're balling right now, and they know. I for some reason, I think Dallas is aged. They're older. I don't think they have the guns. They might be able to win 1 game, but they're definitely not winning 2.
No, I think they're going to be very competitive. They will win 1 game, and they can at the very least get 2. They're not going to take them 7, but even Darren Williams is playing decent. Just Dirk. They're a team that likes the Wes Matthews. They got a good collection of guys, man. They got a good team out there, and they play way above any expectation that any of us have for them this year. So, I think they're gonna be all right. I think they cannot and will not beat Oklahoma City, but they can push them. They can make it uncomfortable, and I think they will make it uncomfortable. Even if it goes 5, I think it'd be 5, games that. OKC is going to have to play from start to finish. You have to play, hard. But, I like Dallas, man. I like what a lot.
I'm watching the OKC team playing without Durant and Westbrook, pushing San Antonio with some of their star players in an overtime. So I think OKC is poised to kind of go on a playoff run. I do think Dallas will make it somewhat competitive, but they'll kind of flatten out. So I have this OKC to beat them in no more than 5 games. But, yeah, I think Dallas is going to have some moments where they're going to look really good, and that would only probably be at home.
I agree.
last series, we're talking about Clippers, and we talk about Portland Trailblazers dropping dimes. Maybe we're talking about dropping dimes in this one. That's an excellent 4-5 matchup.
That series could go 6-7 just because of the Dame Lillard factor.
I think that's going to be the best series
in the West.
Yep. At least based on the odd matchups that we said, I think that's definitely one of the eye-popping series in the first round.
Should be, right? Dame is Dame. He's going to do what he does. You know, stuff. You know, you love what Portland has done. If it wasn't for Steph, you know, doing what he does, I mean, you could really, really make a legitimate argument for Dame Lillard as MVP. I mean, he has just played unbelievable. You just think this kid wasn't an all-star. You talk about getting snubbed. That being said, I think the Clippers take care of them, and I think the Clippers take care of them fairly quickly. I say 5 Clippers and 5. But, again, 5 tough games. 5, you know, fairly close, you know, highly contested games. You lose in 5 doesn't mean that it's not a competitive series, but you know the Clippers are a lot better than people think. They're getting Blake back. I think they're going to be tough.
Hey, I'm going to pick that series to go 7. I'm going to pick that series to go 7. I think that series is going to go 7 games, and that's going to be the talk of the first round for the playoffs, because you feel like you got to have one of those series that everybody's talking about that stretches out. I happen to feel like that's the one where Golden State is going to get a lot of rest, and they're going to be waiting for those guys to beat up on each other. And Golden State will take it from there. They're going to let those guys beat up on each other, and they'll just kind of take over it from in the second round. That's just how I see the crystal ball shaping up.
Yeah, I definitely think.
Get it.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm talking over someone.
I definitely think that series is going to go 7. And not for nothing, I actually feel like if the Clippers lose in the first round, Doc Rivers might be in trouble.
Pretty interesting one. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hey, but I don't know about that one. Like you get rid of Doc, who do you bring in?
Who knows, man? It's just they lost in the first round. They haven't done anything. They're going to have to reach. They're going to have to trade Blake. They're going to have to do something. It's had the same thing for the past 4 years, and they haven't even gone to the conference finals.
You don't trade Blake.
You don't trade Blake. Hey, 2 things I want to talk about, fellas, before we wrap up. One, this one could be really short. MVP Steph Curry. Anybody disagree?
No.
I think that's a unanimous. That's a landslide. That's not a. That's no moss. Bert Durant voice. That one's done. The last thing, I guess, is we could close the show out one at a time, and maybe Ed, you can start. You know, we could probably go oldest to youngest here. So I guess I'll go last. favorite Kobe moment. Favorite Kobe moment as we kind of send Kobe out with a send-off tomorrow?
Mine obviously is being a witness to the 61-point game at the Garden.
You stole mine.
Yeah, you know, I was there and getting a jersey signed by him that day. And every time he came to the Garden, he always acknowledged me, especially during practice when, you know, it was just me there. And we had ball talk, nothing crazy. But just to him, like, to come up to me and be like, hey, what's up? How you been? How you feel? Like, that felt like, wow, y'all, you know, it's kind of cool that, you know, a guy this big, you know, walks up to me just to say hi. So, you know, that's my special Kobe moment.
Dope. Jared, are you next? Or?
Yeah, no, WAP 2. Seeing him win his 4th title, it was my first time covering the NBA Finals. They beat Orlando. Just being in the locker room and being able to kind of see that up close and personal. I had never had the opportunity at that point to be at the NBA Finals and see the champagne and all that stuff. That's cool. And another one, he was gracious enough to take a picture with my wife when we were in Houston. And just, again, a guy on that level, right, to take his time out and try to accommodate as many people as he could. And we were in a certain space at that particular time. He was very gracious and very kind and took a picture with my wife. And, I appreciated that, made her day. And that was cool, man. So more power to the emperor. Really appreciated that.
Hey, my favorite Kobe moment was one to witness that 81-point game. I wasn't there and witnessed it, but just to watch it, to kind of see it all unfold, to see him nearly come close to the Wilt Chamberlain record, I think was special. Kobe has always been one of my favorite players outside of Michael Jordan, and I always liked his competitive spirit and liked his performances on the court and the moments that he gave us. And the other one I think that's special to me, when I was with Nike, sponsored by Nike, I had an opportunity to go to a private Q&A with Kobe in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And my dad, who was sick at the time, really wanted to be there, and he couldn't. And I got an opportunity to Q&A, to ask some questions with him, and to kind of be able to kind of go up and meet him and talk to him and get a picture with him at the time, where I kind of, like, I was younger and kind of, like, idolized the young man at that time. And my dad was really happy and excited about that and keeps that picture with me and Kobe saved in his face.
That's awesome.
So, hey, man, well, this has been Hard to Guard Radio, the extended version. Salute to Jared Rudolph for making this happen.
Yeah, we do an hour every week. We do an hour every week.
He broke the attendance.
Nothing can stop me. I'm all the way up.
Good night, folks.